know, we have been in the midst of our very Bible summer this summer. And those we are sharing these stories that we may have not heard since we were children, these stories that take on new life here in the sanctuary as we read them as adults. We've been going through in order, although we haven't read every story. We have skipped just a few, and we are headed now into the story of Joshua. And we all know this story because of a song. That song, Joshua Fit the Battle of Jericho. And it turns out fit is the actual word in the song. It's not fought. If you happen to sing it fit, you've got it right. But there have been many times when I have met people in churches when I have been serenaded immediately with that song. So I and you, we know it well. As we read the story today, I invite you to open your ears and your hearts for the message that we find here as God speaks to us today. Now Jericho was shut up inside and out because of the Israelites. No one came out and no one went in. The Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have handed Jericho over to you, along with its king and soldiers. You shall march around the city, all the warriors circling the city once. Thus you shall do for 6 days, with 7 priests bearing 7 shofars before the ark. On the 7th day, you shall march around the city 7 times, the priests blowing the shofars. When they make a long blast with the shofar, as soon as you hear the sound of the shofar, then all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the walls of the city will fall down flat, and all the people shall charge straight ahead." So Joshua, son of Nun, summoned the priests and said to them, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant and have 7 priests carry 7 shofars in front of the Ark of the Lord." To the people, he said, "Go forward and march around the city. Have the armed men pass on before the Ark of the Lord." As Joshua had commanded the people, the 7 priests carrying the shofars before the Lord went forward, blowing them, with the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord following them. And the armed men went before the priests and blew the shofars. The rear guard came after the Ark while the trumpets blew continually. So to the people, Joshua gave this command: "You shall not shout or let your voice be heard, nor shall you utter a word until the day I tell you to shout. Then you shall shout." So the Ark of the Lord went around the city, circling it once. And they came into camp and spent the night in the camp. Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priests took up the Ark of the Lord. The 7 priests carrying the 7 shofars before the Ark of the Lord passed on, blowing them continually. The armed men went before them, and the rear guard came after the Ark of the Lord, while the shofar blew continually. On the 2nd day, they marched around the city once, and then returned to the camp. This they did for 6 days. On the 7th day, they rose early at dawn and marched around the city in the same manner 7 times. It was only on that day that they marched around the city 7 times. And at the 7th time, when the priest had blown the shofar, Joshua said to the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city. The city and all that is in it shall be devoted to the Lord for destruction." So the people shouted, and the shofars were blown. As soon as the people heard the sound of the shofars, they raised a great shout, and the wall fell down flat. So the people charged straight ahead into the city and captured it. Then they devoted to the destruction by the edge of the sword all in the city, both men and women, young and old, oxen, sheep, and donkeys. Joshua said to the 2 men who had spied out the land, "Go into the prostitute's house and bring the woman out of it and all who belong to her, as you swore to her." So the young men who had been spies went in and brought Rahab out, along with her father, her mother, her brothers, and all who belonged to her. They brought all her kindred and set them outside the camp of Israel. Then they burned down the city and everything in it. Only the silver and gold and vessels of bronze and irons they put in the treasury of the house of the Lord. But Rahab the prostitute with her family and all who belonged to her, Joshua spared. Her family has lived in Israel ever since. For she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Joshua then pronounced this oath, saying, "Cursed before the Lord be anyone who tries to build this city, this Jericho. At the cost of his firstborn he shall lay its foundation, at the cost of his youngest he shall set up its gates." So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was in all the land. This is the word of the Lord. It may have come as a surprise to you. It may not have if you have heard this story as an adult. But there is a problem in this text that does not escape me today. One that is particularly disturbing, and one that you may have heard. It's when we get to verse 21 here that it reads, "Then they devoted to destruction by the edge of the sword all in the city, both men and women, young and old, oxen, sheep, and donkeys." These words do not flow easily over our minds or our hearts, and I don't think that they should. These words speak about war. War specifically done in the name of God. War, I guess this comes as no surprise to us. We have known throughout history of these type of wars, of total destruction done in the name of something holy. And therefore, I don't just want to dismiss it as if it doesn't exist. And I certainly don't want to excuse it or condone it. But it is here in the reality of the world, that the Bible dares to speak. Here in the reality of the way that war works, that the Bible dares to speak. And so as we hear this story today, those words do not go unheard. But there is also a message within this story that we also need to hear today. Jericho was this great walled city. Great walled city. As a matter of fact, some people estimate that it encompassed about 9 acres of land. They also suggest that Jericho had walls of anywhere from 25 to 45 feet high. Retaining walls built at the bottom and then protection walls even higher. So if we were to circle Jericho at 9 acres big, we would circle it, would be about a mile and a half, a little less actually, but a mile and a half of circling these great walls. And therefore, it's important to know that they did this in the morning. Because if they weren't in the middle of the desert, or at least in this part of the world, it's going to be crazy hot. So these men circle the walls a mile and a half long of this great walled city. And so this Jericho is the first place that the Israelites come to, the first place that needs to be conquered if they are going to settle in the land. And so as we come into this story, the Israelite people are trying to inhabit in a land that is or was not theirs, but has been promised to them. As we begin this story today, God is giving very specific instructions to Joshua. Very specific instructions about how this is going to go. And if we've been paying attention to some of the other stories before this, we know that this is kind of just God's style. If we were listening to the story of Noah, there were very specific instructions about how that ark was supposed to be built. If we were reading through the Exodus story, we would notice the very, very, very specific instructions about how the tabernacle was meant to be built. This is God's style, to provide specific instructions to the people. And the people are following Joshua. They've been following him since Moses left them on the other side of the Jordan. And they are following Joshua almost no matter where he goes, because they believe that this man is their leader. And so Joshua turns to the people and turns to the priests and tells them to get out the shofars, because we're going to have a parade. And it's a parade of men and trumpets and priests, and the Ark of the Covenant, God's presence among the people, walking around this great city. It seems a little silly to us. Or maybe it just seems a little preposterous that this story would work. And I can't help but think that maybe the men walking around this city, walking around behind the priests, continually blowing those shofars, walking behind them, that they had some of the same doubts about what was about to happen, about what was occurring as they just walked around the city. And so maybe, while no words were supposed to be uttered from their lips, maybe, just maybe, one of them leaned over to another and said, "I hope this works." See, this story seems to me to be filled with hope. Hope that this was okay. Hope that God was really on their side. This is the first time the Israelites have come to a place of conflict. And as they go through this, they are really not sure of what is going to happen. And the way that this story plays out, Joshua doesn't even tell them what's really going to happen. He just says, "Walk around the city and don't shout until I tell you to shout." And so these men walk around the city doing just that, obeying and trusting and waiting. When we talk about hope in the Bible, it involves both of those concepts. First, to trust. So we hope in the Lord. We trust in the Lord. And the second part of hope is to wait, or to wait patiently. Psalm 40 reads like this: "I waited patiently for the Lord, and he turned to me and heard my cry." That word is the same word that's also translated hope. I hoped in the Lord. So we trust and we wait. And that is what the people that day around those walls must have been doing. And so it was day 2. And they got up and did the same thing they did before, wondering when and what was going to happen. They did day 2 in hope. Eugene Peterson, a Presbyterian pastor and prolific writer, wrote a book called A Long Obedience in the Same Direction. A Long Obedience in the Same Direction. It's a book about how to live a life of faith. And what he has to say about hope in that book is this: hoping does not mean doing nothing. It is not fatalistic resignation. It means going about our assigned tasks confident that God will provide the meaning and the conclusions. It means going about our assigned tasks confident that God will provide the meaning and the conclusions. And so these men walked around the city, going about their assigned tasks, confident in God. But day three comes up, they wake up in the morning and they do the same thing. Day four goes again, and these trumpets have been blowing continually as they walk, and they're starting to get a headache, or they're just starting to wonder when this is ever going to end. And as they do that, they're staring at these 25 to 45 foot walls there. They look up and look around, and they wonder, how in the world are we going to get over that wall? They start to doubt the word of the spies that went before them when they said, God has given all the lands into our hands. And so they began to doubt. And maybe that same guy turns over to his neighbor and says, you think this is just a pipe dream? You know, often when we turn to trusting in God, it can be seen as dreaming, just dreaming about an outcome that we would desire to have. But when something seems truly impossible to surmount in our lives, when something that we are our assigned task seems really impossible, it's those moments when we really just wonder, is it all just a dream? Am I making this up? But that is not what hope is. Again, from Eugene Peterson, hoping is not dreaming. It is not spinning an illusion or fantasy to protect us from our boredom or from our pain. It means a confident, alert expectation that God will do what he says he will do. It is imagination put into the harness of faith. It's a willingness to let God do it his way and in his time. And so these men continued to hope. Day five comes around. Day six comes around. And the same guy turns to his neighbor and says, this is just nuts. Maybe we should just ram the gates because this isn't working. Maybe we should just do this our way. That's often how things start to fall apart for people of faith, though. When we take the reins and decide, look, we're going to push this through because I believe this needs to happen and it needs to happen now. And so Eugene Peterson once again finishes his conversation about hope by saying this. It is the opposite of making plans that we demand that God put into effect, telling him both how and when to do it. That is not hoping in God. That is bullying God. You see, if there is hope, then hope happens in the midst of our daily lives. And hope happens through words that are not about taking it into our hands, but words that put it all into God's. Those words are trust, obedience, patience, and prayer. These are the tasks that we are called to, even while we are trying to accomplish the path that God has set before us. This is what it means to be a person of faith. This is the life of discipleship. Trust, obedience, patience, and prayer, again and again and again. And as these men were walking around this city, those were the practices that they put in place day after day after day. Because when we're in the midst of days 2 through 6, when we are in the middle of those days of walking around and not being sure how this is all going to turn out, it's really hard to see God in the midst of those, isn't it? It's when we stare at the walls before us. It's when we're doing the same thing we tried yesterday and hoping that this time we will see God respond. It's those moments when it's difficult to keep on keeping on in the life of faith. And so we arrive at day 7. The intensity is at 11. You see, these men are slogging it out today. Because if that city was really 9 acres around, that means that morning they walked for 3 hours. Assuming that's 15-minute miles, you can do the math yourself in a minute. But they're walking for 3 hours around the city, continually blowing those horns. Continually blowing the horns. They're walking around that city, carrying around the Ark of the Covenant as they do it. They are on a parade to nowhere, it would seem, as they circle and circle and circle 7 times. But then, that day, as those trumpets sound, they are instructed to shout, and they shout with all their might. The walls come tumbling down. They take the city by storm. You see, this story, the story of Jericho, is a story of hope. A story about living faithfully, even though they are not sure of the outcomes in the end. They really don't know that the walls are going to fall down for sure, do they? But they do it anyway. They live faithfully, trusting in the God who has been faithful and who is faithful. This is the story of Jericho, and it echoes to us about how to live faithfully, about how to walk this life of faith, even in the midst of some of the most trying times. But this story echoes in another way as well, because in the midst of this story is a woman. A woman who is only described as a prostitute. A woman who, when the spies came in to Jericho, and when the soldiers in Jericho had found out they were there, she hid them and helped them to escape in the midst of the town so that they wouldn't be killed. And when she did that, what she asked for in return was when Jericho fell, when everything came falling down, would they please take her with them, her and her family with them? This story is another story of faith. Because I imagine that as she was there, as those walls came falling down, she was singing, "O rocks, don't fall on me." Because in the midst of that city, she doesn't really know that she's going to survive it. In the midst of war, in the midst of that moment, she does not know that she will really be saved. And she is trusting in God and trusting in these spies that she helped escape, that this would really happen. It was by faith that day that she and her family were saved. And the story says that she lives in Israel to this day. Now, I don't really think that's true, so don't take that literally. She's not really still alive. However, the point is that she became a part of Israel that day. This outsider was taken in, and she and her family were saved, all because of her hospitality before. And you see, her decision and her inclusion into the life of Israel echoes in ours as well. Her inclusion, it turns out, opens the door for ours. In Matthew chapter 1, there is a list. And it's a list of names. People call them genealogies. And her name rings out in the middle of this list. You see, Rahab married a guy named Salmon, or Salmon, whichever way you want to pronounce that. So Salmon marries a guy named Salmon, and they had a son named Boaz. And Boaz had a kid with a woman by the name of Ruth, and they had a kid named Obed. Obed had Jesse, and Jesse had David, who we know is the king. The rest of that genealogy plays out to end with this. Joseph had a wife named Mary, and they had a son named Jesus. You see, Rahab's faithful trust, obedience, patience, and prayer included her in this story of salvation for you and for me. And so whether or not we see this story right now, whether or not we are the Israelites or we are Rahab, their position in life is the same. Hope. These basic tenets of trust, obedience, patience, and prayer are what make this story true. What make this story true for us as we learn to walk the life of faith as well and trust God to provide the meaning and the conclusions for our lives. Because the proof of God's faithfulness, the proof that God is faithful, is only found in living. The truth of God's presence among us and God's salvation is only found in living out these daily steps of faith. As this story ends, we hear the message that God was with Joshua. God was with Joshua. And how do we know that? Because we see a life of faith lived out. Amen.